We continue this week some conversation encouraged and inspired by the book Morning Sun on a White Piano. Wonderful book. I still have a couple copies if you haven't picked up one yourself. The subtitle says it all for me. Simple Pleasures and the Sacramental Life. The idea that our everyday living, the things that surround us, can be unbelievably sacred and meaningful and bring us closer in touch with the divine. There's always a little quote at the front of each chapter, and this week's reads this: "Music must take rank as the highest of the fine arts, as the one which more than any other ministers to human welfare." Today we think about music. It's something that can surround us all the time. It's so easy. It's so easy. When I was a kid, I had this dream that someday I was going to have shoes that had speakers in them, and they'd play whatever song I wanted anytime I wanted it, right? So if I was walking around, I was like, yes, I need like a good groove, and then my shoes would just start playing any song in the world. It's not that far-fetched. I mean, it's not shoes, but I touch a single button, and I can play any song in the world on the Bluetooth speaker sitting in my house right now. It's all there. It's all available. It surrounds us all the time. There's music at the store, there's music in the car, there's music in the in-between spaces. It's just unbelievable how much music actually surrounds us. And if we can expand the definition of music to more than just a song, you know, something with notes on a page and words, we're always surrounded. There was a beautiful piece on NPR this week all about the environment of sound, and people who are studying the ecology of sound, like going to record places so that not just, you know, people are trying to save the trees. These folks are trying to save the sounds of the trees, so that if the trees are ever gone, we can still hear the quaking of the aspens. Or those frogs and the way they interplay with the voice of the nightingale as the stream slowly moves by. They're capturing and recording all these sounds, and it started this amazing conversation all about the power of sound and music, the music of the world around us. They pointed out that everything, I mean everything, has a vibration. Like even bacteria are vibrating in their own little way. And if you know how to listen and measure it, you can listen to the song of the bacteria as they move and shake. Every single cell and creature and being vibrates and moves in this world. It's something that ties us all together, and we affect one another. Actually, when our brains hear a sound, our gray matter starts to vibrate to match the frequency, like a little tuning fork, right? You ding it, you touch it, and suddenly the same sound is going on inside of our own mind and brain. That's how powerful sound is. When the choir is singing a beautiful tune, it's a joyful sound. It literally brings joy inside of us. It's a powerful role to play in a group of people's lives. Sound is so important. It is of all of our senses, the one wired to those primal parts of our brain. If you hear and see something at the same time, it's actually the sound that gets your body doing something before anything else. The path everything else takes through our brains to make us do things can be long and convoluted, but from our ears to the part of our brain that gets us going, it's the shortest of anything. It's the most primal thing. Sounds keep us safe. Sounds keep us aware. Sound changes how we function. So what sounds we surround ourselves with say a lot about how we as people will function and live and who we will be. It's an interesting thing that we as people are always listening for and looking for rhythm. It's actually what triggers that part of our brain in the deepest layer. If something's wrong is when something's out of place. So when out of nowhere a baby cries, well, that hasn't been the rhythm. And so that catches our attention. Or if you talk to one of the moms swaying in the back, you hear the crying all the time. It's when the crying stops that you worry, right? It's whatever the rhythm is, when it's broken, suddenly something's wrong. It's why even, you know, when you're camping or you're staying at a motel and there's a train and the cars or whatever these things are, if they're consistent, we somehow can fall asleep. It's when they're completely random that we can't relax. We as people are looking for rhythm and movement and consistency. It does something for us because we as people function that way. It's part of our very biology. We are looking for the rhythm of life. And there's something about that, not just musically, but finding a rhythm in our lives. What it means to find a rhythm, a song in a way, right? If our life flows on in endless song, what is it to find a rhythm that fits for us? Knowing that our rhythm and the rhythm of the person next to us may be different. Yes, they affect one another, but what is ours? What's our pace? What's our flow and our movement? There are times our lives get a little faster tempo than we would like and we long for some stillness. There are times when there are long periods of rest with what feels like no notes for us to sing or play, and we just wish we had a part. Music functions as a beautiful metaphor for us this way. There's some wonderful pieces that just tickle me this way. We went and saw Dvorak's New World Symphony. And it was actually one of these behind the score kind of things where the conductor and a bunch of people were teaching you all about the music. And they were talking about this beautiful piece. And it's a wonderful symphony. And there's this guy sitting there in the corner with his tuba. And they said, so the musicians, you know, they're all getting paid tonight. Just so you know, the tuba player will be playing less than 1 minute of this entire symphony. The symphony goes on for 45 minutes. But Dvorak, when he was working on it, was like, oh, this one little part. I know it's only 30 seconds, but I want a couple lower notes. Wrote in 17 notes for the tuba player. That's it. So the tuba player walks on stage, sits there, just waiting for something to do. And waits, and waits, and then the moment comes, and there are those 17 notes. And then they sit there and wait the rest of the entire time. How often can that be life? Right? We have a part, and it's important, and yet we feel like, why am I not getting to do anything? Why don't I have anything to contribute? And it's all about waiting for the moment. And when that moment comes, what we have to offer is essential and important and meaningful. It has been written in by someone who can see a bigger picture. And we have something to offer. Or other times, it's maybe the opposite. I had a buddy in college who was playing cymbals for the 1812 Overture. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, boom, da-da, over and over and over. The amount of Advil he had to take was insane. Of all the parts to get, at least it wasn't the canons, which actually is written in musically, but the constant banging and clanging and motion. Sometimes life's that way too. We get handed a part in this world and we're like, wait, you want me to do what? I'm going to leave in tears from the migraine this is going to give me. But we play our part. And we're not alone. And there's others that surround us and care for us. For myself, I grew up playing a few different instruments. My favorite is the cello. The cello is possibly one of the world's most beautiful instruments. Except when playing Pachelbel's Canon. There's a wonderful joke that perhaps Pachelbel dated a cellist and she broke his heart. And so for the rest of his life, he wrote the worst cello parts ever just to get back at her. Da, 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 da. You repeat that same four measures for like 20 minutes. No change. No change at all. It's important. I mean, it's one of the most recognizable classical tunes in the world. Halfway through, you're like, are we done yet? You just keep playing and playing and playing, and it's just insane. And I remember that as a cellist, and sometimes life is like that as well, isn't it? We just keep going through it. There are the motions. We almost forget how important the part we have to play is, that it's significant and holds everything together, that all the other parts need that. Because we've just been doing it for so long, we start to question if it actually matters anymore. There's so many songs with so many metaphors. Maybe you have your own. Maybe it's the lyrics. Maybe it's the way the music happens. But these songs that speak as metaphors for our life, reminding us. Because whatever the part, whatever the arrangement, it all ties together to make something bigger. Because that's the piece. There's about finding our part and our place. Music is a metaphor for us, invites us to find where we fit in. It invites us to be a part of something. There's melody, there's harmony, there's movement and motion. In old school hymn singing, when you'd bust out the hymnal, the second to last verse would be sung with parts only. No fancy accompaniment, just the soprano, the alto, the tenor, the bass, just the parts. And then the final verse of the hymn was always sung in unison. No parts. All together. It was this deeply symbolic piece that all these unique and individual roles by the end come back together and join in a unified piece for whatever those final words were, that everyone was brought back together. Each of those parts important, but also tied together into something bigger. We're invited to see and be a part of the music of this world. Music ties us together. But there's also an invitation in the book. He's so good about naming this. An invitation to participate and be a part of live music. There are some concerts you can go to these days where you might as well stay at home and listen to it through a good speaker. Because by the time you hear it, it has gone through 17 amplifiers, 27 speakers, bounced off of four columns back and forth in the Pepsi Center, and then you finally get to hear it. You might as well put it on with a good sound system at home at that point. But then there's that evening you get to go to the symphony or go hear a choir, and you sit, and the sound that you're hearing is the exact sound as it was made by that very instrument. The vibrations of the voice or the instrument themselves, they make their way right to you, and there's nothing in between that vibration and you. It's a very powerful and important thing. It's one of the reasons, Mallory, we are so grateful for the gifts you bring when we get to hear the music and not just listen to a recording. Or the choir, when you share your voices with us and offer us music, we're hearing something that's real and live, and it doesn't matter if we record it and play it back over and over and over, it will never be the same as in that moment. The best recordings can't capture it the same way. I love the flute this morning. This space does beautiful things with instruments. The sound just floats, and it can't be recreated. That's another thing music and sound have to teach us. There are moments in life that when they happen, you enjoy them as they are. No matter how hard you try to replicate them, you just have to enjoy it now. Our scriptures talk about this a bit. They talk about the idea of coming together and being together. In Colossians is what we're using this morning. It pops up a few different places. I want to share with you from Colossians in the third chapter. Hear these words. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were all called in one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom, with gratitude in your hearts. Sing psalms, sing hymns, sing spiritual songs to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Our scriptures invite and encourage us to share in making music together as a way to learn and experience, as a way of being tied together in community. These things are scriptural for us. Now, you'll note that Paul in the writing here doesn't say you have to sing well. Paul says you need to sing together. Paul doesn't say you need to know the tunes beautifully and sing it as a solo. This is about community. This is about being together, offering our part and sharing in it. Actually, as I was reading this and preparing for today, this opening piece about let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts got me thinking again about how everything in life has that vibration, that rhythm and movement. And I wondered what it would be like if we considered the peace of Christ to be a rhythm of life. We use that term, right? A rhythm of how we live and other things. What if that peace of Christ is a rhythm of living? Let that rhythm rule in our hearts. And if we do, we begin to vibrate in the same way, and we begin to carry that tune with us. And as we've heard, as we carry that kind of tune and rhythm with us, as we share it with others in that moment, it's a rich and beautiful thing. And those who experience that beautiful rhythm, the vibration of God's love as shared in each of our lives, are affected by it as well. And when we hear a tune, we also, receiving it, begin to share in that same rhythm. And suddenly, all the world moves in a rhythm together. Dr. Mayer, in his writing here, has a beautiful comment about music. He also spends some time talking about dance, and that music and dance shouldn't be separated from each other. That the idea of listening to a song and a rhythm is meant to be embodied. You put on music, you watch any child, they will move. And yet somehow, between our beginnings and our adulthood, we, most of us anyway, quit moving. Or need a lot of encouragement or a very dark room with some flashing lights to participate in it. There's a self-consciousness that we're uncomfortable with. I wonder if it isn't that way sometimes with sharing God's love. I watch our kids so eager and happy to share who they are with the world and be exactly who they are and who God's created them to be, and they're putting their vibration right out there for the world to hear and to see, like most of us did as children. And then somehow between then and now, we get a lot more reserved, and we don't want to do that in public anyway. When I was a child, I loved music. I was probably one of the only three-year-olds who was saving up for a Steinway. That was what my coin jar was. I wanted a piano, and I wanted to be able to play it like George Winston. That's the music I used to listen to as a child. And I would always run over to the CD player and ask my dad to put on George Winston, put on George Winston. I knew exactly what CD it was in the little six-pack and what track it was. And he'd put Pachelbel's Canon on for me, and they'd leave it on loop. They would just leave the song going. And the story my parents tell me is that in our little house in Marshall, Minnesota, they could leave this song on for hours. And I would just stand in the front room and dance. I would just dance. No real rhythm to it. No real reason to it. It's the same kind of dancing I saw last week while we were singing communion. I don't know if any of you noticed, one of the little girls up front started just dancing to the hallelujahs as we were singing our way through communion. I about cried. There's an invitation for each and every one of us to hear the song God has placed in our hearts and to move with it. And to share it, and to live it out the same way God placed it in our hearts, for the world to see and know and enjoy. It's a sacred thing, and I pray we might share in it together.